Mine's a coming-of-age story. I just got a birthday card about a month ago that reminded me of this day that I had 4 years ago while filming on that series that changed my life forever. So I'm just going to tell you about the day as quickly as I can. We had been filming on this series for a month or so. We were going to be there 4 months. And there were about 15 of us, different videographers and producers, that were sort of embedded around the clock all over the hospital, covering stories about patients and doctors and nurses. And I had just been assigned a new patient, a new story. And the patient was Stephen Brown. He's a 35-year-old man from Maine, and he was at Hopkins with his parents, a couple in their 60s, Nancy and Bruce, and they ran a church. He was a pastor and his wife. They ran a church in a small town in Maine. So I met this family, and I met Stephen, the patient. Stephen, about 17 years ago, had contracted some horrible, very rare liver disease. And he had been very sick since being a teenager. And despite being sick, he had gone to college, he had had jobs, he was a very funny person, but now he was dying. His liver was now deteriorated to the point that he would not live without a transplant, so that's what brought him to Johns Hopkins Hospital. He had been there a week or so when I met the family, and at this point, when I met Stephen, he was bedridden, and he was speaking in a little language of groans and moans, grunts and moans that only his parents could really decipher. But he was a beautiful young man, and they were a lovely couple, and I started to get to know them. So the ABC people I was working for were very interested in a successful liver transplant story. We had already filmed a story about an organ transplant that didn't go so well, and the person died while waiting, and that was already going to be in the series. So for balance purposes, the television series needed a successful transplant. And so I was assigned to do this and stay with them day in and day out, and I was with them for a week or two. They needed this for balance, and I also knew the secret that I didn't talk about very often, which was that if things didn't go well with Stephen Brown, he would not be in the series whatsoever. So every day I went and I spent time with the family, and I should say to you that no matter what society we're in, doctors and nurses are extremely busy, and in a place like a hospital ICU or a transplant unit, nurses can spend 5 or 10 minutes at a time. Doctors can spend 5 minutes or 20 minutes at a time. Visiting hours are short. I actually had permission and autonomy to stay longer. So I spent sometimes hours with Nancy and Bruce, and I got to know them very well. And during those days, I would do a little filming of them. I would have interviews with them about Stephen's life. They wanted to tell me everything about Stephen's life, what he had done. I would also do interviews with doctors and nurses about the progress of the patient and also learned quite a bit about organ procurement politics. And because Stephen was so young and because his condition was so horrible, he was going up on the list, and he was now at the top of the list in the Mid-Atlantic to receive a new liver. But every day he was getting sicker and sicker. So sometimes the doctors were saying, you know, every day he's getting worse. We have to get something soon. So it was kind of sad, it was kind of scary, it was tricky, but I just kept talking to Nancy and Bruce every day. And they kind of bonded with me, and they wanted to know everything about me. They wanted to know about my work, about my travels, about my wife, but especially they wanted to know about my only son, Jasper, who at the time was 15 years old. So I spent days telling them every story I could think of, and just by being with these people, they became very attached to me. If I had to go to the bathroom or go get lunch, they would say, "When will you be back?" I'd say, "I'm coming back at 1 o'clock." I'd be, "Okay, great." So I had this rare opportunity. I now look at it as a huge privilege to spend this time with them. I became less and less of a cameraman every day, but I didn't have to. I had no obligation to shoot more than I know I needed for the setup of this story. One day I shot an interview with Andy Cameron, Dr. Andrew Cameron, who was the liver transplant surgeon and director of that program here, and he's an incredible young doctor, not too much older than the patient at the time. And he's just a champion of compassion and hope, and he's very, very passionate about his work. And he said to me, "He's getting sicker every day, but I got to tell you, Richard, if we get a liver and put it in that guy, you will be amazed. I have seen people just like him, sicker than him, and they get a new liver and they're playing basketball in 2 weeks. And he said, so just brace yourself because it's an amazing thing, and that's why I'm so committed to this work. And he was being very serious. That's what runs this guy's life. And you all know that a lot of people die waiting for organs in this country. I don't have to tell you the statistics, but they're horrible. So every day was like this. It was stressful, but there were these little glimmers of hope. And on Thursday, March 7th, 2007, there was this excitement in the air because there was rumor of a liver that was coming down the pike somewhere in the Mid-Atlantic region, and the stats on the liver were very good for compatibility with Stephen. So there was a lot of new gossip coming in, and the doctors were kind of excited about it. Nancy and Bruce were, of course, very excited. So I went home that day, said goodbye to them, went home, and I got, I remember going home just feeling sort of like hopeful and excited and also bracing myself for what for me would be like a 12-hour surgery the next day, which is a very strenuous thing, and I was just sort of getting ready for that mentally. So the next morning, I came there at 6 in the morning or something very early on March 8th, and something had changed. At 4 in the morning that morning, Stephen's heart had stopped, and it stopped for 10 or 15 minutes. And the staff in the surgical intensive care unit heroically resuscitated Stephen and put him on life support equipment. So when I walked in, there was this flurry of activity and this new noise, this huge drone of equipment that was so loud you could barely talk. And there was Nancy and Bruce at the bedside. And there were all these new doctors. And then there was Andy Cameron, who I took aside and did an interview with, and he was visibly angry and despondent. This thing is, you know, this thing happens, and now Stephen is not eligible for any liver, any transplant. Stephen's life is over, and there's little or no brain activity. But we have to wait for neurology to come around and to sort of confirm that, but it doesn't look good. So after that interview, I put down the camera, I put it in the corner of a room, and I stood there. It turned out to be like a 6-hour experience of being in the room with this loud drone of noise with Nancy and Bruce, alternatively praying, talking to Stephen, touching Stephen, and sometimes just clutching my hand. So my job was done as a journalist, as a cameraman. I couldn't leave, though, and I didn't think that I should leave. So I just stayed there as a person, stayed out of the way. And then finally, the neurology team came around and said the news that everybody already knew. And then consents were signed by Nancy and Bruce. And at around 6 p.m., Nancy and Bruce invited a nurse in to disconnect Stephen from the support equipment. And this nurse who came in the room to do this, she had this weird kind of ballet grace. She didn't say anything. She was very serene. And she moved like in slow motion, and she went around the room and very carefully removed all these little connections and these little tubes and then turned off all these pieces of equipment. And the last thing she did is turned off the fluorescent lights, which were very bright over top of our head, leaving just a window with late afternoon light coming in, this aquarium of equipment. And the silence of the room when all that equipment went off was unbearable. It was just incredibly unbearable. And Stephen, on his own, his heart beat for another 5 or 6 minutes, and then it rested fully and he died. And the last thing I remember seeing was I hugged Nancy and Bruce goodbye, and I realized that now's the time for me to leave. Now's the time when they need to be alone in this room and nobody needs to be around. So I said goodbye to them and gave them a hug, and I picked up my little camera. And I look back, and the last thing I remember seeing against this window light, sort of silhouetted, was them over top of Stephen, sort of holding his hands, and looking back at me with these huge, their faces were soaked with tears. They're extremely religious, and they're smiling. Both of them are looking back at me and smiling. And I'll never forget that image, because it wasn't like some polite smile. It wasn't a nervous smile. So I said goodbye to them, and I walked away just thinking, how can these people smile? What is this? I walked down the hall, and I'd been very stoic. I've learned how to be stoic from nurses and doctors in a hospital environment. And I got on a thankfully empty elevator, and I just started crying. And I went down the elevator, and I just couldn't wait to put my camera away in this makeshift office. They gave us a room where we had our equipment and stuff. Put my camera away, get my coat, and go home and just try to recover from this and just try to think about what the smile meant. And it was just devastating. I was drained. So I go to the office and I open the door, and to my surprise, to my shock, there's 13 or 14 of my colleague crew members, and they're all smiling, and they say, "Happy birthday, Richard. Happy 50th birthday." And they have cupcakes and refreshments, and they look at me, and they're as shocked to see me in this state as I was to see them and their cupcakes. And I actually kind of blacked out. I have no. The last thing I remember thinking is that this is what God does to atheists. And then it was a shock. I actually don't remember what happened next. So thank you very much.